from my women. While we rape our women, do we hate our women? I think it's time to kill for our women. Time to heal our women. Be real to our women. And if we don't, we'll have a race of babies that will hate the ladies that make the babies. And since a man can't make one, he has no right to tell a woman when and where to create one. So will the real men get up? I know you're fed up, ladies, but keep your head up.
This is Harvey Picar, and you're tuned to WBAI, listener-supported radio in New York. Is that okay? What do you want me to do, a bunch of them?
Do you know why I pulled you over today, sir?
Because I'm black.
From November 25th to December 11th, the African Diaspora International Film Festival celebrates black life on the big screen with over 60 entertaining and revealing fiction and documentary films, including 34 U.S. and New York premieres. Themed programs include Spotlight on Nigerian Cinema, the Afro-Latino Program, Black Australia on Film, The Senegal Connection, and more. Discover the films Driving While Black, Spirits of Rebellion, Invisible Roots, Afro-Mexicans in Southern California, and Toussaint Louverture. That's the African Diaspora International Film Festival, November 25th to December 11th. For tickets and schedule, go to nyadiff.org on the web, or call 212-864-1760. That's 212-864-1760.
Black August bloom, my soul was fed by you, fed by you.
Listen to my heart speak.
Bathe in the warmth of the morning sun.
I'll wait for you.
I'll wait for you.
Good morning, you're listening to Heart of Mind, Earth at Midnight. I'm Catherine Davis, in fact, in studio with
Paulette Spencer
and
Matt Mazza.
And we are here to share this beautiful beginning of the day with you, the ending of Wednesday, starting Thursday morning. And we are going to be sharing a variety of things with you on this day. I had an interesting conversation with one of our listeners right here on WBAI who gave me a call and said I should check out this president, Woodrow Wilson. So I went to Wikipedia and checked out Woodrow Wilson. And as it turns out, and as described, he is not unlike Donald Trump, or maybe Donald Trump is not unlike Woodrow Wilson. And one of the interesting things that I understand is that Woodrow Wilson is on the $100,000 bill. I didn't know there was a $100,000 bill. Did you know there was a $100,000?
No.
I didn't find the actual reference to that yet. So I'm going to keep researching the guy and see what, you know, there is about this gentleman that is similar to our current state of affairs. When you think about it, time is really a cycle, and we repeat over and over again the same kind of mistakes, or occasionally, I suppose, good things are repeated, though our world seems to be full of the errors in judgment.
History repeats itself, they say.
Yeah, and Woodrow Wilson, Thomas Woodrow Wilson, December 28, 1856 to February 3, 1924, better known as Woodrow Wilson, was an American politician and academic who served as the 28th President of the United States from 1913 to 1921. Born in Staunton, Virginia, he spent his early years in Augusta, Georgia, and Columbia, South Carolina. Wilson earned a Ph.D. in political science at Johns Hopkins University and served as a professor and scholar at various institutions before being chosen as president of Princeton University, a position he held from 1902 to 1910. Okay, I have to break for a moment. Okay, the guy was actually smart. I'm not sure I could say that about our current president-elect. But there are other similarities. In the election of 1910, he was the gubernatorial candidate of New Jersey's Democratic Party and was elected the 34th governor of New Jersey, serving from 1911 to 1913, running for president in 1912. Wilson benefited from a split in the Republican Party, which enabled his plurality of just over 40% to win him a large electoral college margin. He was the first Southerner elected as president since Zachary Taylor in 1848. And Wilson was a leading force in the progressive movement, bolstered by his Democratic Party's winning control of both the White House and Congress in 1912. So sounds familiar, except it's Democrats. So he had the whole ball of wax. And there was a split in the Republican Party, and this time the Democratic Party was pretty beat up. I'm not sure that I would say he was progressive, though. In office, Wilson reintroduced the spoken State of the Union, which had been out of use since 1801, leading the Congress, now in Democratic hands. He oversaw the passage of so-called progressive legislative policies, unparalleled until the New Deal. And I had to put in so-called because, you know, the judgment that these are progressive in hindsight, I would challenge that. Among the things that he did was, included among these were the Federal Reserve Act. Okay, we know how corrupt that is. The Federal Trade Commission Act, the Clayton Antitrust Act, and the Federal Farm Loan Act, having taken office 1 month after ratification of the 16th Amendment. Wilson called a special session of Congress, whose work culminated in the Revenue Act of 1913, introducing an income tax and lowering tariffs. So he introduced the income tax. Through passage of the Adamson Act, imposing an 8-hour workday for railroads. And he averted a railroad strike, so I assume they had a much longer workday, an economic crisis. Upon the outbreak of World War I in 1914, Wilson maintained a policy of neutrality while pursuing a more aggressive policy in dealing with Mexico's Civil War. Well, we're still dealing with that Mexican Civil War, and looks a lot like a wall. Wilson faced former New York Governor Charles Evans Hughes in the presidential election of 1916. By a narrow margin, he became the first Democrat since Andrew Jackson elected to two consecutive terms. Wilson's second term was dominated by American entry into World War I. In April 1917, when Germany had resumed unrestricted submarine warfare and sent the Zimmermann Telegram, Wilson asked Congress to declare war in order to make the world safe for democracy. The United States conducted military operations alongside the Allies, although without a formal alliance. During the war, Wilson focused on diplomacy and financial considerations. So I'm going down a bit. In his 1915 State of the Union, Wilson asked Congress for what became the Espionage Act of 1917 and the Sedition Act of 1918, suppressing anti-draft activities. The crackdown was intensified by his Attorney General, A. Mitchell Palmer, to include expulsion of non-citizen radicals during the first Red Scare of 1919 to 1920, following years of advocacy for suffrage on the state level in 1918. So he supported women's right to vote. So I just found it was very interesting. A devoted Presbyterian, he infused morality into his internationalism, an ideology now referred to as Wilsonian. So that was very interesting. One of the other things is that he staffed his government with Southern Democrats who believed in segregation. And then he gave department heads greater autonomy in their management. So it's very interesting that this president was one who created many of the issues that we are still dealing with today. And so an interesting thing, I'm going to be looking into this a little bit more. Maybe we'll talk about this a little bit more. We will. We have some guests coming into studio, so we will be making a transition for that. And following that, we will open up the phone lines to your participation and phone calls.
One interesting point where he says that he had Congress declare war. We don't seem to bother with that anymore.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. That I mean, there were some things still in place there. And I suppose he you know, like many presidents, there were some good things and some bad things. But I'm going to be researching this a little bit more and be able to bring you more information on this particular presidential dude, Thomas Woodrow Wilson is his actual name. So we're going to play a little bit of music, and then we will introduce our in-studio guests. And so stay tuned. We'll be back in just a moment. I think I'll play...
Thank you. we are pleased to have with us this evening a most notable poet, Mr. Raymond Nat Turner, who is in studio with us, and he is quite a special opportunity, occasion for us to have a poet in-house with us live on the air. Raymond Nat Turner is a New York City poet, privileged to have read at the Harriet Tubman Centennial Symposium. He is artistic director. He is artistic director of the stalwart jazz poetry ensemble Upsurge and has appeared at numerous festivals and venues, including the Monterey Jazz Festival and PanaFest in Ghana, West Africa. He currently is poet in residence at Black Agenda Report and a frequent contributor to Dissident Voice and Struggle magazine. He's also a steering committee member of the New York City chapter of the National Writers Union. Turner has opened for such people as James Baldwin, People's Advocate Cynthia McKinney, radical sports writer Dave Zirin, and California Congresswoman Barbara Lee, following her lone vote against attacking Afghanistan. And so this evening we are quite honored to have with us Mr. Raymond Nat Turner. Welcome.
Welcome.
I'm glad to be present with you. I wanted to see what your little clubhouse was like, and so now I finally got my chance. So,
well, yeah, it's beautiful.
Thank you, and welcome.
We're going to start out by playing one of your pieces of music from Chromatology, and that piece is Operation Homefront. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, my God. Actually, Operation Homefront dates back to the first Gulf invasion in the 90s, and I wrote it during that period, and then we were blessed to go into the studio for the second time, and we recorded it in 2003 for our second CD, which is Chromatology, as you just mentioned.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to play that, then we'll come back and resume, because you have something brand new to share with us today.
Yeah, it's kind of a test drive, so to speak.
Culture of war, cut back on the oil that it kills folks for.
As long as there's greed, there can be no peace. Imperialist bloodshed simply must cease.
Take two, the streets in protest in the USA. Take two, the streets in protest.
Against hunger and greed and racist bloodshed on which fascists feed.
Into battles for homes and hell, soften up enemies to liberate our wealth.
Take two, the streets in protest.
To fork tons and their poles. Listen to the voices that are deep in our souls.
Take two, the streets in protest in the USA. Take two, the streets in protest in the UK. Take two, the streets in protest in the USA. Take two, the streets in protest in the UK. Take two, the streets in protest in the USA.
In the USA.
Take two, the streets in protest.
That was pretty amazing. That was beautiful. From Chromatology and its Upsurge Jazz Poetry Ensemble. How can people get this if they want to? Is it still available?
Yes, they can go to wireonfire.com. Wireonfire.com.
Excellent. So tell us a little something about the piece you're going to share with us today.
Let's see. What can I tell you about it? It's like sound bites and slogans are, you know, just something that's prevalent in the society, and so they can mean anything to anyone. And so there's a particular slogan or sound bite or a campaign slogan or whatever the case may be. And so I don't know what it means, but I know what it means to me, so that's what I will say.
Well, that's what matters. I'm sure that we will all find our meaning within it. So would you like to go ahead and do your piece? I just shifted your papers a little bit, but we want to make sure we get the full force of your voice.
Oh, you will get that. It's called Make America Great Again. 44, 45. Is Sonny succeeding Michael? Gangsters still in power, their states the muscle for fossil fuel families, war profiteer families, big pharma protection bankster families, family values, iron fists beneath the velvet glove, carrot and stick, Mike and Ike, good cop, bad cop, force and deception. Sweet nothing promises wafting with water cannon, pepper spray, tear gas, rubber bullet, bill of rights. Snarling dog investigations and hearings, hearing what's been heard 10,000 times. 2 years of absurdist theater spasms temporarily halted. Curtain call, the commander bows, solemn. We're all one team. Gold-plated Iron Lady resigned. Have an open mind, give him a chance to lead. Sheep-doggy dog co-signing. He's a man that can be worked with. Smoking gun, mushroom cloud, puffed-up Pillsbury doughboy. Trumpolini rises on hot air, unstable, unpredictable, destructive like capitalism, to make America great again. I say, go ahead and make my day, make America great again, when Underground Railroad excursions cost splintered families escaping Christian auction blocked aspirations, when rebellions, raids, war temporarily overthrew torture, murder, mutilation, rape, liberating labor in all hues,
when, at the Battle of the Greasy Grass, Indian Killer Custer met Tough Love, Lakota, Northern Cheyenne, Arapaho style. I say, go ahead, make my day, make America great again, when streets were class struggle universities and communist, socialist, anarchist, labor leaders, the professors. When Flint struck 1,000 points of light, 40-day, 40-night sit-down strike, when self-help movements, sharecropper unions, worker alliance groups, unemployed councils metastasized through 30s veins, organizing unemployed, tenants, farmers, feeding hungry, clothing naked, putting the evicted back in their homes. When longshore workers shut down, tied up 2,000 miles of Pacific coast, when San Francisco, Minnesota, general strikes, concessions trickle down like magic bullets. I say, go ahead, make my day, make America great again, when African Americans walked, carpooled, boycotting Montgomery's apartheid buses 381 days, when students rode buses up south, down south, through savage southern gauntlets, sat in at lynch mob lunch counters, and braved murderous heathens registering elders to vote. When students shut down San Francisco State 4 months, birthing black student unions, black studies programs, when Chinese and Vietnamese issued statements supporting struggles of African-American warriors, when brown berets, young lords, AIM, SDS, NOW, and anti-war activists were born. I say, go ahead, make my day, make America great again. An embryonic world's revealing itself, pregnant with new powers protecting water, fighting for 15, occupying Wall Street, making black lives matter. We're at home with it. We can live with it. You, on the other hand, are unwelcome, not needed, fired. So, Mr. Mother, I say, go ahead, make my day, make America great again.
Wow.
Oh, yes.
That was pretty impressive. That was really beautiful. I'm going to just play a piece of music, then we'll be right back and we'll talk about it more.
Yeah, you see me rolling round in a black Mercedes, cruising round town and it's packed with ladies. Gotta keep it going, yeah, I'm roaming the map. And no, I never stop till I find something to tap. Oh, yeah.
Nokia, iPhone, Galaxy 3, Facebook and your search history, Gmail, voicemail, I gotta have it. It's got an on-off switch, baby.
I'm making a list. I'm checking it twice. It doesn't matter the message or even kind of device. Every pic your daughter sends, we've got it ingrained. Why do you think Anthony Weiner wants back in the game? Surveilling reporters, don't ever forget it. I got so many AP docs, you think I'm getting college credit? Yeah, we're saving your searches. That's just a reality. Yes, we can, ain't just a slogan. It's our view on legality.
Nokia, iPhone, Galaxy 3, Facebook, and your search history, Gmail, voicemail, I gotta have it. It's got an on-off switch, baby.
I'll tell you this, sir, I greatly abhor your violating of the Constitution upon which you swore, and a full investigation is what's needed and more. Have you ever Googled Justin Bieber pics? I yield back the floor. I don't see the big deal.
Why are we having a cow? I mean, look at all the terrorists that we can focus on now. And it's not like we're planting devices in homes. By the way, did everybody get their free Obama phone?
Come on.
With front-facing cameras, our intel has grown. Look at the video we've collected from this year alone. This is outrageous. We should be able to use the bathroom freely. Hello? Hi. How'd you get this number, really? Nothing is private anyway. We're posting on walls, so what's the big deal if the government is saving your calls? I mean, we share our info with companies. This debate should be chilled.
Everybody come quick! A straw man has been killed!
So the next time you're up late and you're surfing your phone, let me reassure you, baby, that you're never alone. And if you don't think that the spying stuff is really ideal, text yourself about it. Let us know how you feel.
Nokia, iPhone, Galaxy 3, Facebook, and your search history. Gmail, voicemail, I gotta have it. It's got an on-off switch, baby. I'll tap it.
And that was Tap It, the NSA Slow Jam featuring Go Remy. We heard before that Walela, Amazing Grace. And our opening theme was Earth by Michelle Indiocello. And then we also heard the piece Operation Homefront from the CD Chromatology. And so that was, I have to say, one of the most powerful poems that I've experienced in quite a long while. That was so amazing. How do you do that?
That's very kind of you, first of all. Thank you very much. You know, I say, you know, when people compliment me that I'm trying and I'm training, you know, like T-R-A-N-E-I-N, if we know John Coltrane was one who practiced incessantly. And so you know, I write quite a bit, and so I'm learning a little something since I've been here in New York. And it's the kind of place that, you know, inspires you to write. And certainly, Lord knows, there are enough things happening that if you...
A lot of subject material, huh?
Yeah.
But your life is very focused, it seems, as well as your poetry and creativity, on having a strong political voice.
Yes,
so talk a little bit about how that was cultivated in you. I mean, did you grow up in a family of political activism? Mm. Was it just what was happening on the streets?
Oh,
is it your own soul coming through? Maybe a little of everything, right?
It could be said that, but primarily anyone who knows me or knows my family knows that my mother was the source of all that. My mother was a political activist. You know, she was came from Little Rock, Arkansas, to Los Angeles when she was 12. And by the time she was 23, the L.A. Sentinel had identified her as a political dynamo. She was picketing Bank of America, Newberry's, and then in her 85th year, a reporter asked her something about her activism. She said, I've been picketing all my life. And she was one of the founders of the Martin Luther King Jr. General Hospital in South Central Los Angeles in the 70s. That they really fought for that. And at her funeral, it was funny, this preacher was relating a story that none of us in the family knew about. A man was killed by the police, and there was going to be a demonstration. The community wanted this demonstration, and so the LAPD did not want the demonstration, and so they said it wasn't going to happen. So my mom went around to a meeting of all the biggest preachers in Los Angeles, and she told them, according to this preacher, that if they weren't there at this appointed place, Avalon and Avalon and Imperial, where the demonstration was to step off, that they would never preach in LA again. And they showed up with their flocks, and it was a huge demonstration, and actually the LAPD couldn't stop it, so they got with it and acted as if they were escorting it, you know. So
That's pretty powerful. That's pretty powerful.
And then I remember once I played Little League baseball. My brother was 5 years younger, and he played baseball too. And my mother had finagled to get him to play with us when he was too young. And I was 13. I made All-Star. And my brother was 8, and he made All-Star. And subsequently, he signed a contract with the Yankees, and he went and to A-ball and Double A and all that. But I remember my mom was trying to get me to go to a political meeting, and I said to her, I don't want to go to your political meeting. I just want to play Little League baseball. And she said, everything is political. How do you think that park got there? How do you think your coach got hired? And I thought she was nuts until I grew up. So I grew up in a very political household, and actually her youth center, the Teen Post, was the nucleus for the Southern California chapter of the Black Panther Party.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That's amazing. So when are you going to write a book about your mom?
Actually, ironically, my son is actually doing that as we speak. He's a professor at UMass Amherst, so I don't know where he's at with it, but he had made considerable progress over the summer. That's the last I know of what he's doing.
Excellent, excellent. It sounds like it's a story that needs to be well known.
Absolutely.
You know, it's interesting. This is really where the heroes and heroines are. They're the unsung people. Nobody knows that they're behind the scenes doing this work.
That's right.
And pushing and creating and creating the unfoldment, really. And I think that's where we are again today.
I believe.
Where we need everybody to bring their energy to the table to unfold a different outcome from that which might possibly occur.
I totally agree with you.
Yeah. I think it's important that we don't get angry, just get busy.
right.
In order to make some change.
That's great.
Yeah, I agree. And I remember reading your poetry and thinking, like, I was speechless. Oh. And so the first thing I thought was, man, I'd love to have this gentleman on the air.
Oh, wow.
And first I thought, make America great again. And I thought,
what does that mean?
Yes.
It depends on whose mouth the phrase is being uttered, what it means, actually.
Exactly.
I know it's really interesting because I have been really paying attention, probably more than I'd like to the whole campaign and outcome and the resurgence of fascism and neo-Nazi attitudes, and really the willingness all of a sudden to be so open about race attitudes of racism, of race hatred, of prejudice against people of all kinds, all colors, all nationalities, all religions, other than the supremacist ideology. And what I find interesting about it is twofold. One, that it's rather shocking to experience, even if from afar, of the media. But it's also something that has not been absent all this time. This is what we've been dealing with all along. So there's a way in which I feel satisfied with it coming out and it becoming very visible so that people can't deny it. Because to me, that was an even greater part of racism, is the denial of what people are going through. And I found it really interesting to see a lot of these so-called left-wing communities going out and protesting and acting up against Trump. And I'm like, well, they're doing that, and I'm glad they're doing that, but it's only because they've been so unaware and so in denial of what this country really has been. And so I just find it, I think it's good that it's all been brought to the surface. I don't know where we're going to go from here. I think that's what's going to make the difference. But I think it was, I'm glad that it came to the surface in a way, because it's real.
Yes, and I'm glad, too, that to see the African-American people awaken from slumber. It seems as though for 8 years the shutters were down and people were being Rip Van Winkles or something. Because, you know, as far as the foreign policy goes, you know, we've back in the days of LBJ, it was clear that you can't have guns and butter. You can't shoot all these Hellfire missiles. You know, they're $110,000 a pop. And there's a whole bunch of popping going on,
yeah.
You know. And so, I mean, what could that do for, say, one school? What could that do for infrastructure that's so in such disrepair in this country? And, you know, and I could go on and on citing these kinds of examples. But one thing I, you know, while I'm very much in agreement with you, and one thing I would hasten to add is that we're a little bit further along this time around. You, I remember when talking, I was mentioning my mom, but during that period, for example, I lived in South LA, South Central Los Angeles, and the only Euro-Americans I knew were the principal and the cops.
Mm-hmm.
Now, fast forward, in our current band, you know, I have the bassist is Italian American, the drummer is Italian American, and, you know, an African American woman, young African American woman is the saxophonist, and Ziggy's Jewish, and then when this pianist, Angelica Sanchez, that we'll be working with us is Latina. So, mm-hmm. You know, it's, you know, so we're further along. And then if you look at the younger people, their hip-hop culture has brought them together. They all seem to have that language.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, Black Lives Matter, if you look at Black Lives Matter and even Occupy to some extent, you know, you saw this cross-pollinization, cross-fertilization of folks where mm-hmm. during my period, you know.
There was none of that. I know.
Right.
I understand. Well, I think you're right about that. We are much further along, and this is especially true the younger people are.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see that they have a different consciousness mm-hmm. than people certainly of my generation and many right. subsequent generations. Yeah. And I guess the thing that I find interesting about this realization of people that this hatred still exists in this mm-hmm. country, it's like you said, it's waking people up on many different levels. Mm-hmm. So it becomes necessary for us to get busy, as I say, because we do not want that to take over.
Mm-hmm.
And if it were up to our mainstream media, that's what would happen. you know, because they kind of have cultivated it mm-hmm. with all of these right-wing pundits and all of the way that the media has been portraying people. And so it's kept it alive in a way. And then we have all these politicians who have also kept this very much alive. And so now we're at a crossroads where people really have to choose what kind of world we're going to live in. And that's why your poem is so perfect for this time.
I also think that in addition to this, these sort of schisms, I think that what's happening is, and I think Trump and his PR people are particularly good at this, is they pit people against each other
mm-hmm.
so that you don't actually look at what a fraud you might think he is.
Right.
And so I think it's very interesting how this, as Kathy's saying, the media sort of participates in this as a player. But at the end of the day, the aim is to set people against each other so that you're always talking about each other rather than looking at him and scratching too deeply at the surface.
Right.
Yeah, and I think you're right. That's the politic that has prevailed for the last, I don't know, almost my whole political conscious life, I would say. But it's been really bad since the 80s on. It's been progressively downhill in terms of that kind of political consciousness, and the politics of divisiveness has been very, very strong, starting with, what was it, Reagan, and then going into Bush, and then into Bush, and then into Clinton, and then into Obama. It just, this divisiveness continued and escalated. So I think we're at, you know, everything is up in the air. So there's an opportunity, there's a certain way that there is an opportunity to have a transformative moment, because not so much that the people in power are changing, mm-hmm. but that the population is changing. The consciousness level is really rising,
you know,
across boundaries.
Yeah. Also, I wanted to say that our consumer culture is part of it. If the advertising and the mainstream media, the products that they advertising us to buy, if we have enough smartphones and stereos, we can concentrate on that and not see what's going on in the world. You know, if we're engrossed in that, computers, internet, it gets very interesting from that standpoint. And also, you know, in this poem, you're stating so clearly all the issues that are involved and the possible solutions as well. It's very interesting from that standpoint.
Oh, thank you. I mean, I do believe that we, the people, have the solutions. You know, we are the ones we've been waiting for, really, you know, and sometimes we lose sight of that. And certainly the media, and I just won't call them mainstream because it's minority media, you know, because it's multi-billionaire media.
Yeah, well, and multi-billionaires
are minorities. I don't know very many of them, do you? I mean, you know. And one thing I you know, speaking of, I'm writing all the time now, and I am working on a piece called Do the Math. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of to address the point you're making. Of course, you know, divide and rule is the only thing. If we're the 99% and they're the whatever remains,
yeah.
You know, the only math operation you could do, you're not going to do addition or multiplication. It's either going to be subtraction or
division. Well, that is very true. And I think that's why it's so important for people to become really centered and be cognizant of the truth and to promote that unity of awareness and consciousness and of action. It's the only way forward. And right, I love that idea of, I'm not going to call it that anymore. Because in truth, it is just the mechanism of mind control.
Yes, it is.
And people who attach themselves to it get easily brought into that energy of anger and fear and fear. Conflict. Oh, yes. And so the real powerful path is to pull one's energy out of that. And also why it's important for WBAI and Pacifica to be supported and sustained, and to really begin to look into other ways of communicating with each other. But most importantly, the two things I feel, in addition to pulling out of that mind control, is to get the system that it's been embedded in us out of us, because we still are too often in conflict with each other and doing the work of destruction by judging and fearing each other. And so that's the internal work that really needs to be done for change to really happen in our world. I want to open up the phones for a few minutes before we get to our reading. If you would like to join the conversation, you can call 347-335-0818. 347-335-0818. We started out the program talking about Woodrow Wilson and his contribution to our lives, including the Federal Reserve Act, the Federal Trade Commission, and many other retro institutions that may have looked good at the time, but really are the very things that undermined our freedoms here in this country. So you're welcome to join us at 347-335-0818. We'll play a bit more music, and we'll give you an opportunity to call, should you like to do that.
Myself, I'm a man of wealth, an stolen faith. I was around when Jesus Christ had his moment of doubt and pain. Me damn sure the pilot washed his hands and sealed his fate. Pleased to meet you, hope you guessed my name. But what's puzzling you is the nature of my game. Stuck around St. Petersburg when I saw it was a time for a change. Killed the Tsar and his ministers. Anastasia screamed in vain. I rode a tank, held a generous rank. When the bliss free raged and the body stank. Pleased to meet you. Hope you guess my name. Oh yeah. I was puzzling you with the nature of my game. Oh yeah. I watched the glee while your kings and queens fought for 10 decades for the God they made. I shouted out, who killed the Kennedys? When after all, it was you and me. Let me please introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and taste. I lay traps for troubadours who get killed before they reach Bombay. Pleased to meet you. Hope you get my name. Oh yeah. But what's puzzling you is the nature of
And you're listening to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org. I'm Catherine in studio, and we have a call. Hello, Ziggy.
Hi, Catherine. Thank you. It's great just to hear how you mix things together. I love listening to the Sympathy for the Devil. It's perfect. I wanted to just say that if people do want to get a hold of Operation Homefront, the tune you played from Chromatology, Upsurge Jazz CD, upsurgejazz.com is our website. So that's a really good place to get it. We also do have it available on Amazon.
On Amazon. Cool, cool. So what other, would you like to add some thoughts to our conversation?
Just a great time of gratitude this time of year. Lots of stuff happening. Standing Rock, I wanted to acknowledge that struggle that's going on out there, and our strength in prayers are with them. And just our families, and Raymond's mom was quite an amazing woman, and as my dad's memory, to honor his memory as well. So that's what I want to say.
Oh, thank you. And you are Ziggy Loewenberg, part of Upsurge Chromatology, the Jazz Poetry Ensemble. And what is that website again?
It's upsurgejazz.com.
Excellent. Thank you for joining us.
Okay, well, thank you for your show. It's wonderful. And you go WBAI. We love you.
Thanks.
Okay,
bye-bye. Bye-bye. All right, and if you'd like to call and join us, it's 347-335-0818, 347-335-0818, and we'll play another bit of music, and then we'll come back and listen to Matt Mazza. He's going to be, oh, we do have a call coming through. Let's say hello. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello, Kathy.
Hi.
Hi. Wow. This is a whole new era. This is now pre-Trump election, post-Trump election. Life after Trump.
Yeah.
I mean, Kathy, have you heard, obviously every show has been, not every show, but it's about, you know, this is it. What do we think? What you're doing right now is the, you know, the umpteenth show with the most important question. What does it mean? Have you heard anything, anyone saying things like, well, this is going to short, like, here's an old idea from the 60s, I remember. This is going to, there was a group of people, I'm not going to give names of what they're called, whatever. They wanted things to get worse so the revolution would come sooner. You know what I'm talking about?
Well, I know the concept, yes.
Right. So I guess those people right now, 40 years ago, what they were saying, I guess if they open their mouths now, they're going to say that today, you know? I mean, okay, for Jeff Sessions, I mean, for a KKK, you know, such an obvious KKK sympathizer, and yeah, when I watch Fox, I monitor Fox, Kathy, hear them try and spin how, oh, Jeff Sessions said it's so long ago, right? Like there's a statute of limitations on KKK reality. All right.
Okay.
What I want to say, Kathy, I guess, is that yeah, it is going to make things worse, but they're going to pass their bills. You know, they've got the people who are in, like the guy who's doesn't believe in science, doesn't believe in global change, climate change, is on one of the heads one of the committees. So they'll pass legislation, and guess what, Kathy? In 4 years, you know, okay, gerrymandering—that's a big thing, right? With the district lines are drawn so to make the party in power get an unfair advantage. You know what I'm talking about?
Well, I know what you're talking about, and I see what you're saying, and I agree with what you're saying.
Every 10 years, it doesn't change, Kathy. Only every 10 years do they redraw those lines. So I remember saying when they won in 2010, I said, "Well, we're going to have to wait until 2020 to get those lines done fairly." And by the way, maybe the fact that millions of more people, you know, the popular vote was so overshadowed the electoral vote that this will shed light on. You know, it's not fair, and you know, the big issue, it's not fair. So the redistricting has to be done in a way that is fair. And guess what, Kathy? Speaking of the Supreme Court being tied, you know, one of the things that Trump will now have his appointments, if the issue of redistricting can be something that's appealed to the Supreme Court, and guess where it gets shot down for our benefit? At the Trump Supreme Court. Isn't that nice?
Right. Well, yeah.
Next call. I'll make room for someone else. How's that?
All right. Thank you.
All right, Kathy.
It's obvious that that's what the outcome is going to be. So we can either stand up against it or we can cower in the corners. I don't see any other alternatives.
Well, I mean, I think for those of us who work in the community in various forms, mm-hmm. we have to do more of it.
Yeah,
and it's not the time to like shy away from it or be fearful.
Hello, you're on there. Hold on, just a sec. Yeah, go ahead.
Because we're still the majority.
Yeah,
and if, as long as we understand that people are trying to actually divide us, there are enough of us to can see through that.
Yeah, and to take action. Hello, you're on the air. Sorry.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, thank you.
We all have to be good and great on this day of. Things taking. Mm-hmm. Basically, I've been doing some research on the Electoral College, the number of on the levels of votes that a state can have. And I'm not sure if everyone's aware of this, but how this was organized is the southern states decided that they would count the slaves as part of the citizens, as part of the people that can count for Electoral College. And this whole side about, oh, well, we have to wait. No, we've waited long enough, all of us. And what's happening in North Dakota? Oh, I wish I could be there. I'm in New York, and I wish I could be there. Because that water, that whole land, that whole situation is going to affect all of us. And to stand up and say something, no matter if I'm saying it here in Brooklyn, just to say it, it can stop the powers that want to be. And most of the folks that is on the Trump train, they have some investment into that pipeline. So as far as just sitting back and saying, oh, well, let's wait, nah. No, there's no waiting. There's no waiting.
I agree.
No, time is now.
I agree. We really do have to act accordingly and not just sit back and do nothing. Because the steamroll will keep rolling over us if we don't stand up to it. So I totally agree with that.
I have a question. Your artist, I'm sorry, I came in the middle of the poem about
Raymond Dot Turner.
Make America Great Again?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Awesome. What's his name?
Raymond Nat Turner. Say that again, what you thought of the poem?
I'm sorry?
Raymond Nat Turner and the...
Thank you. I heard Nat Turner. I was really
is that
awesome,
right?
Brother.
Yeah,
awesome.
Chromatology is the name of the CD, Chromatology. And it's, Upsurge Jazz Poetry Ensemble. Mm-hmm. And do you remember what was the website that Ziggy... It's upsurgejazz.com. Yeah, upsurgejazz.com. I didn't have your mic up, unfortunately. Okay, thank you very much.
Raymond Nat Turner, yeah. Blessings. Peace.
Bye-bye now. Okay, that was lovely. She was just saying how that your poem was awesome.
Oh, thank you. Wow.
Yes, we had a headphone snafu here.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's take another call. Hello, you're on the air. Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, hi. I wanted to speak to Davis.
I am right here. Yes.
Oh, okay, fine. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I didn't realize I was on the air. I wasn't going to call, because I came in like on the middle of the program. I came in, I was leaving work, and I didn't get a chance to turn the radio on. I was at work late. Anyway, first I wanted to thank you. You sent me some very nice positive affirmations a while back. I'm hoping maybe sometime to be able to join you for the Qigong classes. Also, I missed out on your on the offering that you had for the talking about the connection between the indigenous American Indians and black people. And I would like to, at some future date, I hope that you offer that again at one of the next fundraisers, because that's a very interesting subject. I was kind of numb when the election happened, but now I'm hearing how they're talking about how Trump will be, have like the legislature behind him, Republican dominated legislature, and then he's the president, and then he's going to do a lot of damage. I think that people are going to be starting to build bridges between the other 99%. Instead of being so divided, we're going to start appreciating each other more. I'm upset because like the gentleman said, that people have put their shutters down. They thought it was post-racial, whatever. The thing was is that Obama, he had to, when he came in, he had to, the same position where he had a democratically led Congress. I mean, they were the majority, and he came in and he could have undid a lot of damage that President Bush did, but he didn't. And it's he did a number of things during his terms, but. I'm just so sad because he didn't really, use the power like he could have, but I know there's different constraints on people once they get into the position that things they say they can't always bring them all the way through. And I'm hoping that that'll work also with Trump because he's like I said, he's going to do a lot of damage, and I find I was brought up like a Pentecostal, actually, a holy roller is what people call us. And, I'm not following that so much now, but the thing is that, behind the Judeo-Christian traditions was that, it's like last days and time, things are just going to get worse and whatever, and that's it, and we have no control over it. And I find that back in, in my psyche, in my, behind the thoughts that I have and whatnot, I'm saying that maybe it's just not going to get better. But I decided and whatnot, once I was no longer feeling numb after, start to believe that, okay, he is the president, or will be the president, that I'm just going to, live every day and just enjoy myself, and then, and try to do things, and try to, participate more in things going on in the community. I'm going to come down and help at the station. And like that lady said, my heart goes out to the people in Standing Rock. It's a shame, it's like, it's a crossroads too, because they talk about, clean energy. Somebody came on the other day and was talking about clean energy, and I'm saying that you know they're getting ready to ruin that Colorado River, you know, and they just haven't learned their lesson, you know. And I had some other things to say, but I'm sure somebody else wants to call. And I thank you for your program, and I'm going to when I get home, I'm going to go into the archives and bring it up and listen to the poetry. Mm-hmm. And just thank you for everything you do. And I love that reading also about the, I think it's Isaiah, about the gorilla. And that's like awesome, that character.
Yeah.
Explaining like how all these things are going on. It's just, I mean, people just need to really get a hold of that and whatnot. Like from like an objective point of view, like seeing like it's all leading up to man, you know. And I love how how it's explained. And hope to call some other time. Sherman from Queens.
Thank you. Thank you so much for calling. And I think one of the advantages we do have at this moment, if you want to look at it this way, is that people did go to sleep on Obama. Nobody wanted to oppose him or to create. I mean, his core community didn't hold his feet to the fire. And I think that was a failure on our part. We could say he was the complete, he didn't do anything. But we weren't there to hold his feet to the fire. And in this instance, that will not be the case. And so that's where I'm looking at juxtaposition, that we have an opportunity with people rising up and waking up to actually do something to counter all these measures that would be put in place. I really appreciate your call.
Can I just say one last thing? Yeah, that's true. And I'm glad that, you know, maybe it's better that, you know, that Hillary didn't get elected, because she's just more of the same. You know, she was a hawk, you know, in disguise. And and all the stuff that, you know, the Glass-Steagall Act, the war on drugs, the other things that happened and whatnot. She and the Clintons, they're a bunch of mobsters. It was some of the worst things that ever happened to people of color and to this country, NAFTA and all of that stuff like that. And I didn't hear the talk that you had about Woodrow Wilson, but that was a cloak and dagger thing. They did that at night. In the middle of the night, they passed that legislation. And everybody still thinks that, because it's called the Federal Reserve, that it's the government. It's not. It's private bankers controlling the money.
Well, then,
you know, and
they try to do the same thing. They try to do the same thing with the TPP, Trans-Pacific Partnerships.
Yeah.
And of course, people were aware of it. The activists.
Yeah.
The activists.
Yes,
were
they
effective.
Were. Uh-huh. And she was for it too. She said later on that, no, I'm not for it. But she was for it, you know. And I think that she's going to come around back to it, you know. And you know, it's a shame, one, because they, you know, I'm going to just pull out my copy of 1984 and read it again, because all this new speak and double speak and stuff they're talking about and saying, you know, like the Clean Air Act, but yet it takes regulations off of, you know, allows companies to have a bigger carbon footprint or to move money around to buy carbon, those things like indulgences, like I forget what they call them, but you could, you know, you can buy, you know, buy a certain, put money out, and then you can make more pollution and whatnot because you bought up somebody else's carbon footprint, whatever those credits were. But
it's,
you know,
craziness.
I love
it's
the
insanity.
I was going to say I love the program. I looked at Gaia Scenic View, and it's a lovely picture of you. But I kind of picture you to be more smiling, because you have like a smiling voice and whatnot. But it's a lovely picture, and I read the poetry and the writings that you've written. And like I said, I look forward to getting my hands on that information, the connection, the Black or Indian connection and whatnot.
Yes,
and,
we'll be covering that again. Thank you very much.
Okay. And happy holidays of whatever you celebrate, like the lady said, Thanksgiving. Whatever, you know.
Okay.
And
okay,
then.
All right,
thank bye-bye. You so much. Okay, everyone. Goodbye.
Goodbye. And also, when you pull out your copy of 1984, make sure you take with it Animal Farm as well.
Okay, so do you have time, Matt, to do a few passages?
Absolutely.
And while you're finding your passage, I think we have just one more call coming in. Hopefully it'll be... Hello, you're on the air. Did you have something to share? Hello? Please turn off your radio. Hello?
Oh, hi. Yeah, it's, hello?
Yes,
hello?
Quickly, please.
Hello, yeah.
You're on the air.
Okay, I'm fine. I'm it's cool.
Did you want to say something?
Yeah, I want to talk to my little Qigong master.
Yes.
You know, I mean, she went to China. You know, she's a Qigong master.
Okay, well, thank you. I don't want to be talking about that at the moment, but thank you for calling. Okay, Matt, we're going to move to your presentation. What is the number on your mic?
Number is 2. Okay. Number 2.
All right. Go for it.
All right. It's hard to give a brief synopsis of this, but basically, for those of you who are listening for the first time, this is a dialogue between a student and a teacher. And the teacher turns out to be a gorilla. And it seems to take place on a telepathic level, where Ishmael, who is the gorilla, is mentoring his student. In the last episodes we were reading, Ishmael is talking about laws. Now, two kinds of laws. There are physical laws, then there's legislation, you know, a law on washing your car on Sunday or something like that. You could change that by a vote. But the law of gravitation, for instance, cannot be changed in such manner. So he uses the analogy of the laws of aerodynamics. Before people were flying, those laws were not relevant. But when people wanted to start to fly, then did they know anything about the laws? No, they had no knowledge. They had to find it by trial and error. And he was saying, well, people tried, well, if you want to fly, you got to imitate the bird. You have to have flapping wings. So they tried that. And he talks about the guy who gets in this contraption where you pedal and it flaps wings like the bird, launches it off a cliff. And he seems to be fine. He's enjoying the space of the air. He's in free air, but he is also in free fall. He's very high up, so he still is enjoying the free airspace. But he doesn't notice right away that the ground is approaching him. Well, all I have to do is pedal harder and harder. And he doesn't see the abandoned craft on the ground that didn't work. So, to continue, he goes on to the next. Here is a puzzle for you to consider, said Ishmael. You are in a faraway land and find yourself in a strange city, isolated from all others. You are immediately impressed by the people you find there. They're friendly, cheerful, healthy, prosperous, vigorous, peaceful, and well-educated. And they tell you things have been this way for as long as anyone can remember. Well, you're glad to break your journey here, and one friendly family invites you to stay with them. That night, you sample their food at dinner, and finding it delicious but unfamiliar, ask them what it is, and they say, oh, it's bee meat. Of course, that's all we eat. This naturally puzzles you and ask if they mean the meat of the little insects that gather honey. They laugh and take you to the window. There are some bees there, they say, pointing to the neighbors in the next house. Good Lord, you exclaim in horror. You don't mean you eat people? And they look at you in a puzzled way and say, we eat bees. How atrocious, you reply. Are they your slaves, then? Do you keep them penned up? Why on earth should we keep them penned up? Your hosts ask. To keep from running away, of course. By now, your hosts begin to think you're a little weak in the head, and they explain that the bees would never think of running away because their own food, the eggs, live right across the street. Well, I won't weary you with all your outraged exclamations and their baffled explanations. Eventually, you piece together the whole ghastly scheme. The A's are eaten by the B's, and the B's are eaten by the C's, and the C's, in turn, are eaten by the A's. There is no hierarchy among these food classes. The C's don't lord it over the B's just because the B's are their food, because, after all, they themselves are the food of the A's. It's all perfectly democratic and friendly. But of course it's all perfectly dreadful to you, and you ask them how they can stand to live in this lawless way. Once again, they look at you in bafflement. "What do you mean, lawless?" they ask. "We have a law, and we all follow it invariably. This is why we're friendly and cheerful and peaceable and all these other things you find so attractive in us. This law is the foundation of our success as a people and has been so from the beginning." One of the points he was making in the last chapter is that as we developed, we don't think that these natural laws apply to us. So if you apply this to the environment, we can have it's all right for us to pollute, but like the guy who's pedaling in his plane doesn't see the ground approaching. Anyway, to continue. Here, at last, is the puzzle. Without asking them, how can you discover what law it is they follow? I blinked at him for a moment. I can't imagine. Think about it. Well, obviously, their law is that A's eat C's, and B's eat A's, and C's eat B's. Ishmael shook his head. These are food preferences. No law is required. I need something more to go on, then. All I've got is their food preferences. You have three other things to go on. They have a law. They follow it invariably, and because they follow it invariably, they have a highly successful society. It's still very tenuous, unless it's something like cool. I'm asking you to guess what the law is. I'm not asking you to guess what the law is. I'm asking you to devise a method for discovering what the law is. I slid down in my chair, folded my hands in my stomach, and stared at the ceiling. After a few minutes, I had an idea. Is there a penalty for breaking this law? Death. Then I'd wait for an execution. Ishmael smiled. Ingenious, but hardly a method. Besides, you're overlooking the fact that the law is obeyed invariably. There has never been an execution. I sighed and closed my eyes. A few minutes later, I said, "Observation. Careful observation over a long period." That's more like it. What would you be looking at? What would you be looking for? For what they didn't do. For what they never did. Good. But how would you eliminate irrelevancies? For example, you might find that they never slept standing on their heads, or that they never threw rocks at the moon. There would be a million things they never did, but these wouldn't necessarily be prohibited by law. True, Well, let's see. They have a law, they follow it invariably, and according to them, following this law has given them a society that works very well. Am I supposed to take that seriously? Certainly. It's part of the hypothesis. Then this would eliminate most of the irrelevancies. The fact they never slept standing on their heads wouldn't have anything to do with having a society that works well. Let's see. In effect, what I would be actually be looking for, I would be closing in on it from two sides. From one side, I would be saying, what is it that makes the society work? And from the other side, I would be saying, what is it that they don't do that makes the society work? Bravo. Now, since you've worked this out brilliantly, I'm going to give you a break. There's going to be an execution after all. For the first time in history, someone has broken the law that is the foundation of this society. They've outraged, horrified, astounded. They take the offender, cut him into little bits, and feed him to the dogs. This should be a big help to you in discovering their law. Yes, I'll take the part of your host. We've just been to the execution. You may ask questions. Okay, just what did this guy do? He broke the law. Yes, but specifically, what did he do? Ishmael shrugged. He lived contrary to the law. He did the things we never do. I glared at him. That's not fair. You're not answering my question. I tell you the whole sorry tale as public record, young man. His biography, complete, is in every detail, is available at the literary. I grunted. So how are you going to use this biography?
Unfortunately, we have to finish it next time. I'm already engrossed if I know. I think it was the visitor who refused to eat bees that's being executed. That's my guess. But we'll see.
We'll find out next time.
So I want to thank all of you for joining us on Heart of Mind, Earth at Midnight. Any last thoughts, Raymond Nat Turner, you'd like to share with folks?
No, I want to thank you all again for inviting me, and I want to encourage your listeners to support WBAI. We need independent voices more than ever at this moment. And don't become alarmed. Because history, if we look at throughout history, I remember a man named Richard Nixon was puffed up and he came in and he and Spiro Agnew, and I remember him getting on a helicopter, resigning, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's nothing's written in stone yet. You know, we can write this chapter. You know, it's, you know, we have some agency in the writing of this chapter.
Beautiful.
Well, you know, Donald Trump has never said, I'm no crook. I'm not a crook.
Yeah, I agree with that. So we have to go. Any last thoughts, Paulette?
No, this was a beautiful show.
I agree. And if you'd like to make contact, you can do that at heartofmindradio@gmail.com. If you need any further information or want to communicate, that's the way to do that. Stay tuned. Coming up, Hour of the Wolf with Jim Froin.
Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. This morning, a pre-recorded program with guest Kidge Johnson. Stay tuned. And once again, good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund, and I'm going to be playing for you an interview and a reading from Tuesday, November 15th of this year, where Kidge Johnson and Sonia Tafe were our readers, and this program features Kidge Johnson. Kidge Johnson writes short stories and occasional novels and has won the Hugo, Nebula, World Fantasy, and Sturgeon Awards. Her latest books are the Tor.com novella, The Dream Quest of Velet Bo, and The Riverbank, coming out from Small Beer Press in 2017. Currently, she teaches creative writing at the University of Kansas, where she is also the associate director for the Gunn Center for the Study of Science Fiction. She splits her time between Seattle and Lawrence. She taught writing and science fiction at Louisiana State University and at U of Kansas, and she has lectured on creativity and writing at bookstores and businesses across the country. Since 2004, Kidge teaches the Center's intensive science fiction and fantasy novel writing workshop. From 1999 through 2004, she taught a series of writing classes at the Gen Con Game Fair. She taught at the 2011 Clarion Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers Workshop. In the past 10 years, she has worked as a managing editor at Tor Books, collections and special editions editor for Dark Horse Comics, editor, continuity manager, and creative director for Wizards of the Coast, program manager on Microsoft Reader, and managing editor of user communications at Real Networks. As a side effect of the current economy, she made the jump to writing full-time, then completed an MFA in creative writing in Raleigh, North Carolina. Kidge has run chain and independent bookstores, worked as a radio announcer and engineer, edited cryptic crosswords, and waitressed in a strip bar. So, in other words, another underachiever. So, with that, we're going to take you. We used all three floors of 388 Atlantic Avenue. We popped up to WBAI on the third floor. We recorded the interview in two different rooms on the second floor of the building. And then we held the presentation of the Nursef readings on the ground floor. So, set your Wayback Machine and meet Kitch Johnson. Kidge said, bring it on, so it is on. Okay.
It has been brought. Excellent.
And I can tell people that it is November 15th of the year 16, or I should say the year of disaster plus 1 week.
Yes, yes. And, D-Day plus seven.
Yeah, we probably, you know, we may need a new numbering system for dating things because we now live in an alternate universe.
Right. We're on a countdown now instead of a count up.
Yeah. Yeah. But we shall see. At any rate, I have met you before very briefly in passing at the Nebula Awards maybe 7 years ago, were they in New York?
Right.
When the Grandmaster was James
E.
Gunn.
Jim Gunn. Yes, yeah. It was a delight to be here. I hadn't been back to New York since I had moved out 15 years before.
Right.
So many things had changed.
Oh, yeah.
One thing that had not changed was the taxi drivers wanting to talk politics. That will always be with us, I think.
Yeah, sadly.
And I
never want to talk politics.
I never want to talk
politics.
I didn't,
not when they were good. And not now in their bed. Actually, I do have one political thing on my agenda, and it's a very specific one. The question being, and I'll even put it to you, how is speculative fiction going to change, given the change in the sea weather of our politics? I would just preface that by saying it is easy to read certain stories and see that they're post 9/11, or they're Bush era, or they're Reagan era,
right?
Or they're, for that matter, Roosevelt. Either.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Cold War stories. I mean, we always talked about the Cold War stories.
Yeah.
And I don't know. My feeling is that we're going to see a lot of anger turning up, a lot of very dark stories. I'm already working on very dark stories. I have a feeling that we will also see some people will step back into sort of airy fantasies, you know, getting away from... classic escapist stuff.
That's all I have been reading for a week now.
Right, exactly.
Catherine Valenti, Agatha Christie.
Right. Yeah, I went back and I started reading old Hal Clement again because Mission of Gravity is one of the great comfort books
Thank you. I haven't read that.
Oh, it's so fun.
In long enough years,
It is my go-to. I'm on a mission to collect every single secondhand paperback copy of Mission of Gravity so that when I die, I can be like sent off to sea in a Viking longboat filled with them, which will then light. That's how I'm going to go.
Except you don't want them to burn those books, though.
Well, there's a lot of them, it turns out. A lot of paperback copies of Mission of Gravity.
Okay. And, yeah, but is it... Is it in ebook form?
Who knows? Yeah. I have 50,000 tiny paperbacks.
I am of the belief that there isn't a book that shouldn't be in ebook form because it doesn't degrade as quickly as even well-kept dead trees. And also audiobooks because, well, I make them.
I'd always say, yes, that's also helpful. No, the paper copies, you know, that groundwood pulp does not last well. But there's something so delicate about the old paperbacks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's something about cracking them open. And I read a lot of old paperbacks, not just every copy of Mission of Gravity in North America. But there's something about the artifact of the delicate old book.
Yeah.
And there's a gravity even to reading, you know, non-essential books. I've also got paperback copies of The Complete Enchanter, which I've
By L. Sprague DeGan.
Right, and Fletcher Pratt.
Yeah.
I never met Fletcher Pratt.
I never met either of them.
I met Sprague a number of times. He was a blowhard like Lynn Carter, but he was wonderful at it.
He had the best facial hair in the industry, I think.
Yeah, I dare say.
It was pretty. Every picture I've ever seen, he had like a splendid beard. And he had fantastic eyebrows, too. It's like the combo was special.
Alfred Bester.
Oh, yeah. I'm an enormous Bester fan.
Yeah.
Every so often, although I wouldn't say it's exactly comfort reading, but every so often I go back and I reread Stars My Destination and Demolished Man.
Mm-hmm.
Demolished Man, not a comforting read, but a very interesting one.
It is.
And I think it'll be interesting now.
Actually,
to reread
when
it.
People get to the... I have reread it in the last year. And it's interesting because, yes, it's a murder mystery. We're not giving anything away there.
No.
But
no spoilers.
There's no spoiler in there because I think you know by page 3.
Right.
But what is the surprise there is the last, the denouement.
Yeah, it's a very twisty story, and it's a very twisty ending. And that's something Bester did fantastically well, actually.
But it's actually almost a positive twist in its bizarre way.
Right, absolutely. It's marvelous. He was such an amazing writer.
Yeah.
And really, we didn't see enough from him because everything we did see from him was kind of genius.
Oh, yeah, very much so. But in the last third of his career, he went back to science fiction and he was writing